Hey, how's it going? It's Bill Gardner from the Deep End Games, and you are listening to the Night Nerd.
Welcome to the Night Nerd Podcast. I'm your host, Lance. It's Monday, and we're going to talk some video games. Kind of. All week, you're going to get special, extra long shows because just behind the scenes, this week is absolutely insane for me. I have one of the biggest quizzes of my life, test, knowledge checks, whatever you want to call it, of my life. So I really need to kind of hunker down and study on that. But I didn't want you to be without shows. And in case you haven't noticed, we haven't. There's been an absence of DC Animated Adventures over here on the Night Nerd. That's because they have their own feed. SoundCloud.com/DC Animated Adventures. Facebook.com/DC Animated Adventures. Lots of great things going on. So I thought I would, air some of those shows. Some of them are new, some of them are old, which is going to be kind of some of my favorite ones that maybe kind of loosely tie into our normal themes and stuff. So Mondays are normally video games. And we've had some really great episodes involving technology and things like that, but one of the best ones is one of my favorite episodes is What is Reality, featuring the Riddler. And we had our good friend David on. He does sound design and stuff for video games, and we just kind of went through the episode and talked about some stuff, and it was a whole lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. So here it is, What is Reality. Check it out. Go like DC Animated Adventures. We're giving away the complete animated series on DVD and on Blu-ray over there. So definitely worth checking out. But thank you all so much. And we'll see you tomorrow. Here it is. Welcome to DC Animated Adventures presented by the Night Nerd. This is a podcast where we break down the DC Animated Universe from Batman the Animated Series to Justice League Unlimited, one episode at a time. I'm your host, Lance, and today we're looking at What is Reality? Our reality is a little shifted today. Derek's not here, but we do have a very, very special guest here. We have acclaimed gaming composer and sound designer, David. David, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm pretty good.
Nice. So, we talked a little bit off mic earlier. You're a kind of a jack of all trades. You do a whole lot of stuff.
Some of them even good sometimes.
Tell us, so being a composer and sound designer, what does that entail?
It entails a lot of reading what the client wants you to do and nice. Trying to parse that out.
So when you're doing sound and things, that's the same but different as visual, because you're an artist as well.
Sure.
And I think that's a interesting connection there, how those senses kind of work together to complete the story, especially in the realm of video games, which is kind of what we're going to look at today with What is Reality, what 1990s VR looks like versus what today's VR
looks like. I mean, if only it was like that, right?
Right?
Oh, man.
Be able to just multiply yourself and It's what the Riddler does. When do you remember watching Batman? Like, what was your first exposure to Batman?
My first it's that weird thing. I was so young. It's either a comic book or it was the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure which, but I know I watched the cartoon since I was a tiny, tiny kid.
Oh, yeah. It's so good.
Yeah.
Like, that's why we sit around and talk about
and
it.
That's pretty much what got me, because I was a Marvel kid with comics, but, I think the cartoons were what really made me like DC.
Right.
Yeah.
They were all, back in the 90s, Batman, X-Men, Gargoyles, there were just so many great cartoons. Who is your Batman? A lot of people say Kevin Conroy. Personally, I do. But I know a lot of people do the Adam West, Michael Keaton, Val Kilmer, George Clooney, Christian Bale, Ben
Affleck.
That
kid from Gotham. No, I'm just
yeah.
My Batman, I guess by default, Conroy. I really had high hopes for Affleck, but it doesn't seem like his heart was in it.
I feel like it was at first, and then it just kind of dropped out.
That's what got me excited, that first movie, and then the second, you're like, oh, you just don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, because the fan backlash, everybody's like, oh, Affleck, blah, blah, blah.
Sad Affleck meme.
He was the best part of those movies. I mean, anyway. But, yeah, so we're going to jump into it. We do these shows in production order. That's the order they were created. Surprise, Fox messed that up and aired them out of order. But it's either on the DVDs or they're on Amazon and everything. So let's just go ahead and jump into it with what is reality. Fire up those DVD players or your Amazon Prime in 3, 2, 1, and play. So we have What is Reality. This was the 48th episode produced. It originally aired in weekday on November 24th of 1992, and it would go on to air in primetime on March 7th, 1993. So there's someone that they brought back because it's so good. And it's written by the team of Mark Eisenberg and Robert N. Skur, who did 3 episodes of Batman the Animated Series. They worked on X-Men, Beetlejuice, Gargoyles, you name it. Everything they've done. And it's directed by Dick Seabass, who did 9 episodes of the animated series, including some of our favorites, and would go on to do a lot of stuff for Marvel. So yeah, it was the 45th episode aired, so not too much difference between that, you know, one and the other. So we have What is Reality, the good old calculator font on the thing. But things have come a long way, you know, in video games. Like we were talking earlier, if you were to make a Batman VR game, what would be some focuses, you know, what are some important parts that you would think to, like, a crime-fighting type game?
Yeah, I guess it depends what kind of Batman you're going for. If you're going the one that swooped in and did everything, or if you're going for the, like, more on the ground, skulking around, you know?
Yeah.
I know for sound design, one of the things, like, if you're going high up, and I'm never the one who, like, installs into the game. My partner does it, the guy I work with. But I remember one of the things she told me is, like, you have to have this perfect mix of, like, a fuzz and a hiss on your ear, or else nothing seems real. Your brain automatically tells you, oh, this isn't real. This is fake.
Yeah, I think that's, like, how we've gotten to a point, and again, this goes back to the audio and the visual, where the imperfections are what make it perfect.
Sure.
You know, because nothing in the real world is perfect. So, yeah, you can't trick your brain. You know, I remember there was a phase there where TVs, you know, were so crisp and so clear. And everyone was like, that doesn't look good. It looks fake. And, yeah, I would think that sound is kind of the same way.
I mean, it is. Have you ever gone back and played those old games that's real? I mean, they're nostalgic. But you're like, yeah, these don't sound anything. Like, even when the punches are supposed to sound real, it doesn't.
Yeah. When you're doing your sound design and stuff, you know, I see some people who, you know, punch the watermelons and they do all the weird, bring in a bicycle wheel and do crazy stuff. Are you more of a physical or digital recreationist when it comes to sound?
I mean, if you want to do a good job, you have to be a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things, you know, I used to do, you just, if something calls for a squeak toy, you get a squeak toy and you squeeze it.
Yeah.
A different one, but it doesn't sound right for some reason. Like, when you're playing a game, you want that realism, but you also want that little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Just so that it pops with everything. So you'd have to do the EQ, you'd have to maybe bring in something else that has a little bit more of a bass to it so that you have that whole thing. It's a weird, just Frankenstein of a way to do things.
Yeah. I know one of the times my childhood got crushed, because, you know, when you're older, you get your childhood crushed a lot. But when I learned that in The Lion King, they didn't even use lion roars because they weren't, like, strong enough. So they're all, like, a mixture of tiger roars with, like, a wolf growl. I don't know. It's like a weird, like, it's a kind of Frankenstein thing. And it's cool and sad all at the same time.
And you'd be surprised what kind of stuff you can use to make things. Like, I remember I worked on a Spider-Man VR game. I know this is DC.
Oh, no. actually, we usually end up talking Spider-Man.
Yeah. So I did part of the thwip. And one of the things was I put my mouth, and that went into it, and that helped a huge amount.
Nice.
And it's such a dumb thing to think about it that that would, and you're like, oh, okay.
So with that, like, how does that, is it just trial and error? Like, are you sitting at the mic going, whoo, pa, 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 like,
I mean, it's a
lot
of,
find something?
You can't be too gentle with it. You can't be too perfectionist with it either. You know, you just kind of go in there and you do your best. And if it looks, sounds good enough, you're like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
And then you think, oh, I got to put like 4 or 5 more layers on it. So then you go to like get other stuff. Like I know I used an aerosol can. I used a bunch of stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
The real quick, I do want to point out in the episode, they're talking about the Baxter's box, which is a Rubik's Cube. And I didn't realize until Ready Player One that you can't say Rubik's Cube without their consent, because that's why in Ready Player One they call it the Zemeckis Cube, after the guy that did Back to the Future. I just thought, like, a Rubik's Cube was, you know, like a Phillips screwdriver. Like, it's...
But it's a happy birthday song.
Yeah, you just can't... Apparently you can't
use it. Well, now you can, but back then everybody was like, everybody had their own. Every restaurant was like...
happy birthday. Oh, I hate when they do that. So, talking about, you know, times from then to now, you know, we look at this machine here, this massive, massive computer. You know, in the 90s, I had a personal computer, and it wasn't the size of a room, but I would imagine to pull off something that he's trying to do, it wouldn't need to be that big. In modern times, you know, well, like you said, you worked on the VR. What kind of processing power, you know, does it take to really run? Because I know visually you have certain standards and stuff. Are sound cards and things as finicky as video cards, I guess is what I'm getting at?
Not so much. I mean, most standard sound cards will do a decent job.
Mm-hmm.
It's more, the thing that comes down is what you want visually. You know, if you want that clarity, higher resolutions, you got to have a faster GPU. You got to have everything has to be like a 1080, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, if the visuals aren't your... what you're going for, I mean, cell phones do it now too.
Yeah.
I mean, oh, yeah. You get the cardboard stuff, stick it in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, my Samsung has like an OLED screen and all this stuff and the sound, like the stereo sound. When it comes to games, you know, when I'm playing, it's usually kiddos asleep and stuff, so I have to wear dual ear cover, you know, on ears and stuff. I know a lot of people, though, just wear, like, the one ear and the mic or something. When you're designing, you know, do you take that into consideration? Like, okay, is the end user going to be wearing this or this? Or do you just say, hey, I'm making it for this. This is how it should be experienced. And that, I mean, not sorry about you, but kind of sorry about you if you're not using...
It's kind of sorry about you, but also sorry about me, too.
Yeah.
I'm putting this much effort, but I know... it's not always going to be that way.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're making it knowing that ultimately a lot of people aren't going to care.
Yeah. And that, yeah. But see, but I think that's something that is beautiful about it is you have one of those jobs that if you're doing it right, nobody knows it.
Sure.
You know, because you'll notice, like, the thwip. If it, you know, if it sounds like he's dropping a bucket of bolts or something, well, that's not a thwip. Who did? Oh. That guy did this. Okay. I'm not, you know, so that's, I think really cool. It's kind of like a superhero like that, you know, it's a thankless job, but hey, you're making the world a better place. And, that's, I don't know. That's something that's really cool.
And the thing that's interesting about that is that when we got told to do the thwip, like I got first dibs on it. So I did my whole, like a whole entire thwip, but it was too silky and smooth sounding. So they came back and said, hey, we want to sound more mechanical. And we're like, but I put so much work into making it sound smooth. So it
should be smooth. When designing for VR, is that different since it is more immersive? Is that different than designing for non-VR?
Most of the stuff is mono.
Really?
Yeah, because you have to place it in the environment.
Yeah.
So you can't really put a stereo sound file in there.
Okay.
Yeah, which it's weird because you make them stereo because that's the easiest way to do it, and then you gotta export it out as a mono file.
Huh.
So one of the things you gotta be careful of is you gotta make sure that it works as a mono.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've even here on the show I've run into instances where an interview will be, you know, mono or stereo, and trying to get it to the other way, and it's like, oh, it sounds like they're talking over themselves, or it just doesn't doesn't work that way.
So that's, I mean, yeah, that's one of the things. It's weird that you say that, because you think, oh, immersive, it's going to be all around you, but it's not. It's like, no, it's a little sound file.
Yeah.
Like, you put a bunch of work, if you heard the original file, it'd be beautiful. It's still good when you hear the original, but it's like, oh, you put it with everything else, it's just part of the whole at that point. And that's also something about being a sound designer, is that you got to not be so precious with your work.
Yeah. When you say part of a whole, let's say in an average, we'll go back to the Spider-Man game, in an average scene, you know, or environment, how many sound cues and sound effects and things are there?
I mean, you got to have as much as the character can do.
Mm-hmm.
I know in Spider-Man, we had to make things in such a way that it would be able to cut between themselves and go, because you had at least a dozen different web shooting varieties.
Oh, wow.
So somebody would shoot something, and I know I made the web bomb.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have the web bomb going off in the distance while you're shooting, you know, a web right here, while a robot's going off over here that you just shot and blew up. Or another thing, like you dropped a cup. So you have all these things going on, and then you also have to have the backing track. So I think that's where it gets tricky for programming. That's why I'm glad I'm not a programmer.
I've always wondered about stuff like that, you know, and
it's because you can tell when stuff's done badly. You know, you play those games where like everything starts up and everything just seems jammed, and you're like, this is just noise.
Yeah, one of the things that gets me the most is if you're in an open world game or something, and you're in a really crowded area, and you leave, but it's still loud, you know, like the traffic doesn't die down or get quieter. It's like you're still there, or you know, somebody's voice, even when they walk away or you walk away, it's that like the same level. And I don't know, it doesn't happen a lot, but it's happened in a few games. I'm just like, oh, come on, I'd rather it be quiet than.
And then you start to notice that fade that you have another game. You close the door, stuff becomes muffled. You're like, oh, I took that for granted.
Yeah, it makes you definitely appreciate all the other stuff. So have you, outside of video games, you know, have you done, what other kind of sound stuff have you done?
I make music. Everybody's a musician. I have two.
I'm not.
So I make my own stuff. I've worked on jingles for things and like demos for, you know, virtual instruments and stuff like that. Mm. A lot of times they don't get used. You make them, and they're like, oh, we got somebody that we licensed. And you're like, okay, cool.
Nice.
Whatever. At least I got a free instrument out of you.
Yeah, that's so really
it's
cool.
It's that kind of thing. So I've done those kind of things. I've made a lot of stuff for myself, too.
Yeah. That's really cool. I didn't know. Because anymore, you know, everything is so fluid. You know, we talked about physical versus digital. But I feel like now, you know, you make one of these sound files, and I feel, and I could be completely wrong, but you know, once you have that file, I feel, can they just like drop it in a video game or drop it in a cartoon or drop it, you know, kind of wherever they need, or does it have to be?
It kind of comes down on the contract you sign, and most of them, when you're a sound designer, is a work for hire contract. So whatever you make is theirs. But at the same time, if it's your library, and as long as it's not that exact sound, as long as you know, it's yours. And that's a lot of libraries that you just buy are the same way. You can't use the exact sound they have, but you can use it with, you know, other stuff.
So like your thwip, if you were to do the silky smooth thwip, is that your thwip? Or is that still their thwip? Or is that just kind of a gray area?
It's a gray area.
Yeah.
Because I could just release it for free. It's like, yeah. Anybody, but you know.
Thwips for everybody.
But if Sony comes back and tells you what, I'm like, I can't tell them not to.
Yeah. I love how to be in the VR is just on your head. There's no goggles or anything that we've come to know.
That's just more like Matrix stuff.
Yeah.
In the back. Like, yeah.
You're literally plugged into it. Yeah, that's just.
And in real life, whenever you see somebody ride a you know, roller coaster in VR, they're flailing around and Gordon in the distance just sitting there.
Yeah. I love the interactive VRs now, you know, where you can go somewhere and the seats move. It's like, what they call it, 4D or something cheesy like that. But because I remember, not to date myself, but when VR first started coming out, and I mean, it was super, super blocky and everything, but you would like climb in the things and they would kind of roll around. You can move your head a little left and a little right.
Oh, man, that's fancy stuff. I just remember the Virtual Boy.
Yeah. Oh, I have a Virtual Boy. But now, like you said, for your phone, for my phone, I can plug it into a little thing and I'm fully immersed in the stuff.
If you put your hands just the right way looking at the phone, you can get it.
Yeah. It just, virtual reality's come a long, long way. What are your thoughts on virtual reality versus augmented reality? Or is that a...
I mean, honestly, I think augmented has longer legs.
Mm-hmm.
I think virtual is going to be... It's a nice gimmick. I don't know that it's going to catch on.
Yeah.
Like, I think you'll see specialized places with VR rather than, like, in somebody's home.
Right.
It's because there's so much that goes in there. You got to have so much space. You got to have all these things. So I think it's going to be a specialty thing.
Yeah.
You go, like, an escape room, but it'll be all VR.
Yeah.
You know, they have those things now that are, like, an augmented with the virtual. You put the thing on. Mm-hmm. It's a room. I can see that going. But
yeah.
As far as just everyday use and getting bigger augmented realities,
I mean, going to be the way. You know, we talked, this episode's, 25 years old, 26 years old, and virtual reality is still not a huge thing, you know. As far as in-homes, Oculus has their stuff, but price point is really... Sony has their thing, but most of those games are really just glorified demos.
I mean, hell, even the Spider-Man game. You can download it now, but it's a demo. It's just an experience.
And then, which is totally cool.
Yeah.
It just...
That's what I see it being. It's really hard to craft a game that we're used to that's 40 hours or even 15 hours that you're going to stay in there like that.
Yeah.
You really can't binge VR.
Yeah. I mean, I know even when I use mine, I don't play a whole lot of games on my VR because it is on my phone. But even, just watching Netflix, I just fall asleep. I get tired of being in that little room and... I don't know, there's something, I think, like you said, augmented reality, AR is definitely going to be the way to go, which at that point, you know, you're having to lay sounds over the real world. I mean, how does that, I mean, my brain's not, can't even wrap around that.
That's a bridge I haven't crossed yet.
Nice.
I could see how that would be really hard. I mean, you'd want to assume, I guess, my professional opinion, I just did air quotes, my professional opinion is that you would hope people use headphones with it.
Yeah.
You know, but if they're out in the middle, like Pokemon Go, most people just mute that.
Yeah.
And just go on their day and just play. Like, I never remember hearing anything in that game.
Oh.
I never heard a Pikachu or anything. Just like, oh, there's a thing, I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, see, not the biggest sound guy as you, but I enjoy, whether it be animation or movies or... I do enjoy sound design, and I think video games are definitely a good platform for that. And I think that is one thing where the VR, I think audibly, maybe the VR might excel a little bit more because, like you said, most AR stuff, people are just like, okay, cool, I'm just going to do this. And
VR, like I said, the thing that's going to keep it from getting widespread is because it's such a contained thing.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be engrossed in it completely for it to work.
Yeah. Changing gears here a little bit and going back to some Batman stuff. So this is only one of three Riddler episodes. They only did three Riddler episodes through the entire run of the show, which is kind of weird, as big of a villain as he is. You know, when you go back and look at the 66 Batman, how he was there all the time.
Well, the games now, Arkham games, he's the villain of all of them.
Yeah, he got 1,000 little Riddler trophies. Oh, we were talking achievements and completions. That's... In Arkham Knight, I didn't even try. I got 100 of them, and I was like, no.
I got enough to fight him, and that was it.
Who is your favorite Batman villain?
Favorite Batman villain of the past, or are we talking about all time?
All time.
All time is Boogeyman Joker.
Okay.
Like the one right after Death in the Family.
Mm-hmm.
When he came back, and he was just real creepy. I loved that. I was like, why isn't he this all the time?
Yeah. As far as... Like, from the cartoons and stuff, who was your favorite?
I mean, Mr. Freeze, just because I could feel for him.
Right. There's been a lot of studies and articles and things about how this show reinvented... I mean, because Mr. Freeze was essentially like a D-list villain.
Oh, yeah.
And then
Paul Dini got a hold of him with Heart of Ice and was like, oh, okay, this is somebody who has a really tragic backstory, and you feel for the guy, and, you know, yeah, he's definitely one of the better villains to come out of the show. I was always a Clayface fan, too, but he was, because the character design was really cool.
I mean, his run in the comic books recently is one of is great.
Oh, yeah, what Tinian was doing. But that's another, like, as much as we think of Clayface, Clayface only had two episodes that he was in. So it's kind of crazy when you, you know, think about these big iconic villains and they're just not there. I think it's neat how this is a processing joke. Essentially, it's like, oh, your machine's not tough enough to run this game, which you hear PC Master Race people always comparing, you know, their machine versus somebody else's, and this is so far ahead of its time for doing something like that.
And before Nintendo and Mario 128 and all that stuff.
Yeah. I love video games.
I do too.
They're just so much fun.
We're just going to talk about that for
for the next 5 minutes. We're just going to talk, or 3 minutes. What's your favorite video game then?
My favorite video game? Oh man, I want to say something nostalgic and old, but it's The Witcher 3, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that just, I've always thought this was, I wanted to work in it. It's an art form, and that one was just like, oh, this is the culmination of what it can be.
Nice. You know? I'm a Halo man. Halo, that first Halo, there were so many iconic moments, and like, you're just like, okay, like the first time you see the ring, first time you see the flood, like everything that goes on, there's just so many great moments.
I mean, it's a great game, yes. Yeah.
Are there any games that you've played and you've noticed, we'll keep it positive, you've noticed the sound and you're like, oh my gosh, that's awesome sound, that's really good, good. Kudos to that person.
I mean, the go-to is always Dead Space games.
Yeah.
Like, that is really hard to make an engrossing, terrifying soundscape on top of, you know, the game. It didn't take away from the game. It added completely to it. And that's what you want. You never want it to stick out, but you also want people to notice it.
Yeah.
And that was perfect for it all.
I don't do scary games. I played those a little bit, and I was like, we need to play this in the middle of the day with the lights on.
Oh man, I play it at night, freaked out, paranoid. Yeah.
I'm a big wuss. It was, but the it's weird, those quiet games. We had Bill Gardner from Deep End Studios on our other show a while back, and he did a game called Perception. That's about a blind girl that's really does echolocation stuff.
I remember seeing the trailer. I haven't played that, but I've seen the trailer.
It was really, again, I told him, I was like, I played it a little bit, man, but then it got creepy, and so I'm just going to say it's probably a really good game. But yeah, so final thoughts on the episode. I know we didn't dive into it too much, but it's a Riddler episode. It's a recommend, because it's the next last chance you're going to get to see the Riddler. I think it's a lot of fun looking at how we always think technology is going to be. We were talking about hackers and the net and stuff like that. So if you're a fan of that kind of stuff, it's definitely an episode to check out. It's a lot of fun. But if people were wanting to find your stuff out there, you said the Spider-Man game's available. Where, you know, what if they want to learn more about you and all your designing and composing and everythingness, where's good places for them to check out or find your stuff?
Well, like Spider-Man VR, the Homecoming experience is available on most things, you know, Oculus, you know, Gear VR, Sony VR, and then my stuff, I'm on Spotify. Nice. David L. Puga, my last name is Puga. And that's a lot of my stuff there. Also, I have an art page on Instagram, Dio Puga Art. Yeah, go check that stuff out.
Yeah. If you're in the West Texas area, he does a lot of conventions around here and stuff, and always has really cool art and things. So that's how we got to know each other. Conventions bring people together.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. David, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. It was awesome.
We'll have you back out. Just hang out and play video games and stuff. But let us know, you know, are you a fan of VR, AR? Where do you lie? You can find us on social media. Just look on Facebook at DC Animated Adventures. You can email us, dcaa@thenightnerd.com. We are part of the Night Nerd family, so You can just look for that everywhere. That's a good little hub to get a hold of everything. But that's going to do it for us today. Thank you all so much for listening. And tune in next time when we break down I Am the Night.